Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Governor Ron DeSantis has made the message loud and clear. Florida has no plans on rolling back. As our state continues to see thousands of new coronavirus cases every day, with the majority coming from South Florida, DeSantis told reporters yesterday that young people socializing are the primary reason for virus spread, not the reopening of businesses. But he advised caution for the 4th of July weekend plans.
If you're somebody who is 65 or older, if you're somebody that has a significant underlying medical condition, maybe your immune system's compromised, some of the other key indicators that we've been talking about for months, you know, I would be very cautious about the close contacts that you're having outside the home.
Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried is taking a different approach. She's been calling on the governor for weeks to implement a statewide mask mandate, and she joins us now to discuss that and other things. Commissioner Fried, thanks so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
And by the way, I want to mention, if you have a question for the commissioner, the number is 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Post your comment or question there, and we'll try to get to as many of them today as we can. Commissioner, why are you calling for a statewide mask mandate?
You know, as you see, our numbers are skyrocketing. You know, as of today, we had another 10,000 new cases reported. That's over 54,000 new cases just in this past week. Our hospitalization numbers are the highest since May 1st. And what's interesting also on this is that we are seeing this with 200,000 tests in the last 4 days compared to 280,000 on the four previous days. And so what we're seeing is that not just our numbers are skyrocketing, but the positivity rating just yesterday alone at 16%. So that's why we've called on the governor to issue the statewide mask order, because we all have to do this together. We all know that the masks in and of themselves don't stop the spread of the virus, but it certainly slows it down. And if we are not showing that this is a priority from our elected leaders and from our governor and from the White House, you know, how are we expecting anybody else to take this seriously?
And the governor has said before, as you know, that he wants to leave it to local governments. He's also said that it would backfire if we try to make it statewide. But why should the entire state make it mandate the masks when really you see the highest concentrations here in South Florida, Tampa, the Jacksonville area? Why the whole state? Why not just those areas?
You know, because it's not just the, you know, it's the whole state. We're seeing upticks even here in Leon County and in the Panhandle. And as people travel our state, for those, you know, who live here, you know that even if you live in one part of our state, you're constantly traveling through the state, whether it's driving from one part to the other, family members throughout the state. We've got 4th of July coming up and people going to the beaches that are open. And if we're all going to stop this and we're all going to try to stop the spread, that we all need to be doing this together. And the reality is that if you having a statewide mask order shows the severity of the situation, make sure that people understand that we're taking this seriously. You know, and when the governor, you know, are making these accusations and accusing certain sectors of our state, you're only just trying to play the game blame, you know, without actually trying to deal with the situation and trying to get in front of it. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I was very hopeful, you know, with this reopening plan. It was based on data point, science, methodical, you know, information, and we just didn't follow it. We opened up our state before ever meeting those metrics that he and himself and the White House laid out. And same thing when we went to phase two. And then there was no enforcement whatsoever. You know, you have one area that says, you know, gyms could be open where the order said specifically that it was not supposed to be. But, you know, when you call into the governor's office and say, you know, can my business establishment be open? And members of his executive team are claiming, sure, go right ahead. They weren't taking this seriously, so why should anybody else have?
By the way, just to clarify, you keep saying we want the governor to make this a mandatory thing. Who's we?
I was talking more so, you know, I have issued this, but a lot of our local governments, you're seeing that across the entire state. I'm seeing it all throughout social media, constituents that I talk to, people that are worried and concerned. So I'm speaking on behalf of the citizens of our state that are trying to get the governor to enforce and to actually put in place a statewide mask.
And how do you enforce that? I mean, do we have to fine people?
You know, it's the same thing. You know, we have laws on the books about seatbelts. You know, and we have laws in the books about putting your child in a car seat and no texting and driving. That's all safety issues. You know, we're hoping, you know, maybe it is fines. Maybe it's peer pressure. You know, there's a lot of things that can go into it. But, you know, certainly if we are not taking it seriously in Tallahassee, how can we expect anybody else to?
And, you know, people will resist. I mean, what do you think about that lawsuit in Palm Beach County? Residents fighting back against the mandatory masks for the county.
Yeah, and you know, of course, I've seen that, and there's one up here as well in Leon County, and I think this is it's what you know. What's so heartbreaking about all of this is the fact this has become a partisan politics, and that you know whether you're a Democrat or Republican on where you are on this issue. And the reality is that we all need to be in this together. You know, yes, I might be a Democrat, but you know what? That's not why I feel that we need to be doing this. It's because I care about the safety of not just the citizens of my state, but the people that might be traveling here for the RNC, people that may want to come here on vacations. We want our tourism and our economy to bounce back up. But if people across the country and across the world, quite frankly, don't believe that we are taking this seriously and we are making this as a priority, why are they ever going to come back here to Florida? And our economy will continue to suffer.
We're talking with Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried. If you have a question for the commissioner about this idea of mandatory masks for the whole state, and what about reopening? Do we have to roll back now because we're seeing bigger numbers of COVID cases? We'd like to hear your thoughts. 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN, or find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. So the governor has said, Commissioner, there's no rollback on the reopening. But again, we're seeing that happening in South Florida. We're seeing rules kind of tightening up again. What should Florida do now that the spread is growing? How do we slow it down? Beyond the masks, what else do we do?
You know, I think a couple of things. One, we need enforcement. We know that a lot of our restaurants, now the bars, but you still have clubs that are open. And not just those businesses, but any type of business establishment that we're supposed to follow certain regulations as far as capacity, safety measures inside of their actual businesses. And none of that was done. There was arbitrary opening, which you know was against all of the interests of the state and against even the platform that the governor showed as rational reasons for opening up. So I think part of it is enforcement. And that is that's why we also opened up our hotline number for consumers to call in and say that a certain establishment is not following the regulations. And that's 1-800-HELP-FLA, or go onto our website, which is floridaconsumerhelp.com.
Did we reopen too fast?
I do believe we did. And you know, and based on, and not my just my personal belief, it's based on the numbers. You know, the governor set out a very, you know, cautious, methodical plan of what data points we needed to hit in order to reopen in phase one and then phase two, in which types of establishments were going to be encumbered under each of those phases. And when he went on to phase one, we had not even met the data points that he had advised were necessary. And so when we did that, and then we just opened up, and then he arbitrarily allowed, you know, WWE, and is arbitrarily allowing, you know, fitness centers and gyms and, you know, hair salons and nail salons and barbershops. That was not part of the original plan for phase one. And so when we did things like that, and everybody just kind of went back to, you know, living as normal, and everybody let down their guard, they let down their security, you know, comforts, and everybody's kind of going back out and started gathering in groups and going to all these establishments and not taking the precautions that they needed to have done.
And we're seeing hospitals in South Florida voluntarily now stop elective procedures because their ICU capacity is dropping. Should that be required elsewhere by the state?
You know, that's something that definitely needs to be examined. You know, that was one of the reasons why I called on a stay-at-home order 3 weeks prior to the governor putting it into place, is because I was concerned about our hospital bed capacity and our strain on our healthcare system. And that, you know, it certainly, I completely understand that so many of our hospitals and medical facilities need the income from the elective surgeries. That's where they get their money from. But if we are going to the point that we can no longer treat patients that are COVID, or just also, you know, patients that are coming in because of car accidents and heart attacks and all the other things, that doesn't stop just because we have a COVID outbreak. I think that this is going to be something that our hospitals are going to have to examine, and hopefully they're putting people over profits.
How do you turn things back now without causing more serious damage to the economy, though? How do we slow down?
Well, I think that it's a combination of information, making sure that people are aware of what's going on. I think that's been another big problem. I've called out the governor on what I believe is been a lot of deception, that we haven't gotten the correct numbers from, whether it's from the nursing homes or the prisons, asking our medical examiners to not report COVID deaths, the firing of Rebecca Jones from the Department of Health when she wouldn't manipulate numbers, changing of how we're calculating ICU beds, now decreasing the amount of testing. People are not trusting what's coming from government. And so I've said that we have to make sure that people know what's going on so they can make some of their personal decisions and businesses can figure out how to best, you know, protect their consumers and their own employees.
What concern, because you mentioned, you know, that the data coming out of the state, what concerns do you have about the data that the Florida Department of Health is collecting right now on this coronavirus?
Our concern is that they're underreporting, that the way that they're calculating positive numbers versus negative numbers. So if you go in and you get a test and you have tested negative, there are actually two samples and they double count the negative numbers and they only count the positive. And if you go back again after your 14 days or you start feeling better and you get positive again, they're also not reporting that second time. And so there's been a manipulation of what those calculations look like, which is why it's really important to look at the positivity numbers and not necessarily at the actual case count. And so I'm concerned that that information that's coming out is not completely accurate, that you'll see a one day numbers looking one way. And then by the end of the day, there's been skewed a little bit differently. You know, I've been following what other local governments have been putting out on their own dashboards, and individuals are starting to take it upon themselves to start following their own local numbers and not relying on the Department of Health. And that's very scary, that the people of our state don't know what's really going on.
Our guest is Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried, again talking about the reopening, talking about the growth, the increase in COVID cases, talking about the idea of making masks mandatory statewide. The number is 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Any question that you have for the Ag Commissioner, let's go to Lena in Sunrise. Lena, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, good day. I am a school teacher in Broward County, and I am really, really concerned about the reopening. I am worried about myself as an older teacher, as well as the students, and I want to know how is this going to happen if we have to physically go back to school, which is probably, what, about a month and a half away. And it is frightening.
And Lena, before I throw it over to the commissioner, I mean, what have you heard from your district, from the Broward County School District?
We haven't heard anything firmly, you know, other than I guess we'll be updated. And yes, you will be protected with the different PPE or whatever you need. But we haven't heard anything. I'm just here creating work that I probably can use if we have to work from home. And I do understand. They're saying the parents want the students to go back, but I'm concerned about teachers.
Yeah, right. No, we're hearing this. We're hearing this from teachers as well. Is they're concerned about getting back, and parents do want their kids back in school. Lena, thank you for the call. Commissioner, right now school districts are working on their plans for the fall and trying to figure out how to get kids back on campus, but doing it safely. Should this be just up to the districts, or should the state come in and say, look, this is how we're going to have to do it safely?
Yeah, well, first of all, Lena, thank you for being a school teacher, and especially in Broward, my old hometown. So thank you for your dedication to our future of our state. But yeah, it is definitely a concern. You know, for your listeners to know, what we oversee the school nutrition meal program. So we are intimately involved with every single district on their feeding programs. And so as we go through trying to help them plan for the fall, whether to be able to have the same amounts of food or are going to be reductions, we know that every district is doing things a little differently, including allowing parents to homeschool their kids that may not have necessarily been allowed, you know, or other circumstances. But certainly, I think that there should be a lot more guidance given from the state level. They're the ones with the expertise of, you know, some of the research that's happening, having access to Department of Health. There should be more guidance on that because we're hearing it across the board from parents who are concerned about sending their kids back. Some counties and districts are mandating masks. Others are doing different timings that you may have like half a day, and broken down into different portions so they can have less kids in there. And so the inconsistency is kind of going to be a troublesome. And I'm worried that some of our maybe less economically secure districts are going to have a problem and do things that may not be in the best interest.
And just to mention, I mean, we are looking into the story and we will be talking with education leaders from all of our districts here in South Florida about their plans. I want to go to Jamie in Fort Lauderdale. Jamie, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program. Jamie, are you there? I think you're there now. Go ahead, Jamie.
Hi. I just have a comment that I wanted to make. I just wanted to say that I was really upset, and I think it's really shameful that I saw that the governor took out a big ad in the Sun Sentinel a few weeks back to tout his 100-member coronavirus task force, which was packed with Republican donors to his campaign, but didn't even include our agricultural commissioner, Nikki Freed. She was not even able to be part of this group. And I just think this is just further evidence that our governor is not taking this seriously and he's playing politics with the health of South Floridians.
Jamie, thank you so much. Commissioner, you're not part of the task force.
Yeah, I was the only member of the Florida cabinet that was left off the task force. That was partisan politics at its absolute worst. I oversee agriculture here in the state of Florida. We are the second largest economic driver, and now with tourism at a standstill, we're number one. And because of my, questioning and trying to hold the governor accountable to his decisions, he decided that it was best to not have me on the task force because he didn't want to hear my concerns in a public forum.
Commissioner, I'm trying to understand then, what power do you have if he's not even putting you on the task force?
Well, I have a significant amount of power. I'm one of our four constitutional officers. I oversee agriculture. So anything that deals with our food and the programs that I oversee, like I said, the food nutrition for our schools, I work with all the food banks. I oversee as far as making sure that our agriculture producers are doing what they're necessary for PPE for their workforce.
So I want to point out that everybody on the cabinet is a Republican. You're the only Democrat, and I'm curious, what is your working relationship like with the governor and with the cabinet?
When it comes to the governor, up until this point, there was between myself as well as my team, there had been an ongoing back and forth, good relationship, and trying to, we have a lot of similar priorities when it comes to the environment, when it comes to our relationship with some of our foreign partners. We all had our first trade mission, all of us together, to the state of Israel to develop those relationships. So overall, and then when it comes to CFO Petronas and A.G. Moody, A.G. Moody and I went to undergrad and law school together, so we've known each other for a significant period of time. And CFO Petronas and I have also known each other for quite some time. So we stay in pretty constant communication. But unfortunately, the governor has canceled most of our cabinet meetings during COVID. I had asked for him to brief us and to update us. In fact, we were supposed to have a cabinet meeting in June. They postponed it to July and then received notification this week that he was canceling it altogether and not rescheduling it. And that was also for our clemency meeting. So unfortunately, during COVID, our relationship has obviously gone very south to the point that he won't take my phone calls, and there has been a lack of communication between his office and mine.
Again, talking with Florida's Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Freed. The number again, 800-743-9576. Before I go back to the phones, I wanted to ask you, just switching things up a little bit because you're the Agriculture Commissioner. We're not in harvest right now. The harvest season has ended for Florida, but what was the impact from this pandemic, in those last couple of months? What have we seen? What's happened to our farmers?
Yeah, it's significant. Agriculture not only is, like I said, the second largest economic driver for our state, but we are the second largest producers of seasonal crops, specialty crops for the entire country. And so it did hit in the middle of our harvest, where most of our producers here in the state supply food to our schools, to our restaurants, to our theme parks, as well as our cruise line industry. And when all of those basically stopped, agriculture took a big hit. I think we've estimated about 5% $522 million worth of losses for those few months. Now, we did get very creative, and we thought outside the box. We created a first ever online commodities exchange, which allowed our farmers to upload all the commodities they had available. Our consumers went right onto the website, were able to purchase directly from the farmers. We have been promoting a lot of our farmers markets, UPICs, and we've seen a tremendous success of consumers going directly to the farmers.
And we, but you know, one of the big things too is that, I mean, when restaurants had to shut down, I mean, that was a big purchaser for the farmers, and they shut down for a while. You know, so what's happened to that? What happened to that excess produce? And schools also, schools had to shut down. That was a big purchaser as well. What happened to all that food?
Well, a couple of things. One, they donated a significant amount to our food banks. So they were very helpful. They also did. They were creative on having their own. You know, I remember down in Palm Beach County, one of the farms down there opened up their parking lot and had people in their cars, and they gave out boxes of food and produce that they collected from other farmers in that community. But unfortunately, a lot of it got plowed under. When they were seeing such losses and the food banks got to capacity and they couldn't donate anymore, unfortunately, at a certain point, they started to having to plow under a lot of the produce and spill out a lot of the milk. But we did get creative, and you know, a lot of them thought outside the box on ways to get to the consumer.
I'm going to go back to the phones. I'm going to start with Karen in Wilton Manors. Karen, thanks so much for waiting. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, Karen.
I give my wife credit. She came up with this idea, which was to come up with an incentive for counties to lower their positive rates. So maybe the state could come up with some promotional idea where the counties who are using the most masks get awarded some award, or who reduce their positivity rates. So something where we, you know, we promote this and make it a competition, because everybody loves a competition. So that was it.
Incentivize wearing of masks instead of punishing. Karen, thanks so much for the call. Commissioner, incentivizing, perhaps?
Sure. You know, look, you know, I will throw everything out there to protect the citizens of our state. So if it's about incentivizing and encouraging not only local governments to enact ordinances and to start, and I did the same thing, you know, even for restaurants, you know, trying to encourage them to still do their capacity limitations and put things into place. And then we can promote that these are the good actors in our state. And certainly, you know, sometimes, you know, a carrot works, sometimes a stick works, but, you know, willing to try it all to help out our citizens.
Let me go to Michael now in Delray Beach. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm a consumer protection attorney here in Florida, and I know the majority of the state's residents don't have any idea that that's the other portion of your department. It's not only agriculture, it's and consumer services. I did have lunch with Judge Flores last year, who was great, and I know she's very consumer-oriented. However, what can we do to at least tell individuals in this state, ones who probably know where Tallahassee is, but ones who, if they do have a consumer issue under the areas that your department covers, where to file complaints and hopefully get them resolved?
Yep. Absolutely. And you're absolutely correct. That is my title, that I've got both hats on all the time. And we, every single year, we're the clearinghouse for consumer complaints. We handle about 400,000 calls, emails, and phone calls every single year from consumers. So the best place is to go right to our website, which is fdacs.gov, and they can file a complaint there, as well as calling 1-800-HELP, FLA. Or also our FloridaConsumerHelp.com is another portal that they can get us to. And we have our inspectors and our law enforcement part of our office working around the clock to protect consumers every single day. And unfortunately, during COVID, we've seen an uptick in different scams and about 450 different types of calls and complaints that we have seen. Everything ranging from people claiming to help them get their refund checks, their checks faster, or at the beginning when there was no opportunities to get, you know, hand sanitizers or toilet paper, they would claim that they have an abundance, and then they give personal information and credit cards, and then the supplies would never come. And so we've been working hard to crack down on all that.
Michael, thanks for the call. I want to switch over to Chris in Cooper City. Chris, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the show.
My question is for Commissioner Freed. I know she's talking about mandated masks. for people. My question would be that, you know, if you're wearing a mask all day long and you're breathing in your own carbon dioxide, how would that affect the oxygen carbon dioxide cycle, that the transfer cycle that happens in your body naturally, and also the thermal receptors that are in your face that affect the regulation of body temperature and stuff. I would like to understand how this would affect the especially the workers who are in the stores, who are in the restaurants, and because it would have a negative impact on their immunity.
This question, Chris, thank you very much. This question's come up before. Now, you know, we have looked into this, and just to say medically that you'd have to be breathing in a lot. Most masks are safe. You're not going to have that issue. But there have been people who've complained about wearing a mask all day or wearing a mask for long periods of time. Commissioner, how do you answer that question?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I don't claim to be a scientist or a medical doctor by any means. I, too, have not heard, and we do have a scientist that is inside part of my executive leadership team. She briefs us every single day on what she is hearing in the medical fields, in the medical community. She has not said that this is a concern of an issue. And from every mask that I've seen and face covering, you know, the point of it is to protect you from getting the spit or, you know, the flow of particles from other people. And from what I have heard and what I have known is I have not seen that, in fact, it changes the oxygen composition of what you're breathing in, that should not have any barriers. But again, I am certainly not a medical expert. I just have not heard any definitive claims that is an accurate conclusion.
And just to mention, too, that we'll post up on the website, WLRN.org, that has been something that's been brought up, but there is scientific information to show, you know, there are people just who are uncomfortable wearing the mask. I'm going to say that, I understand. But to the concern that Chris brings up, there is an answer to that. I wanted to also bring up, there's a question that came in via email from Denise Sears in Boca Raton. Commissioner Freed, you are also responsible for overseeing concealed weapons permits in the state. It's a story that hasn't gotten much coverage amid COVID. Are there any updates? This, I believe, is a story that at one point, I believe, applying for concealed weapons permits had been put on hold, right?
Applying never was put on hold. The only thing that we had put a kind of a hold on was applying online, because the way that it works is that when somebody goes and applies online with the department, one, they have to pay immediately in the application. And then two, within a given period of time, and I believe it's 30 days, it could be 60 days, they have to go into one of our offices to actually get fingerprinted. With all state offices mandated to be closed, there was no opportunities for people to come into our office to get fingerprinted. Now, so that means that if somebody had applied online, they couldn't get their fingerprints from us. There's no ability for us to repay those individuals who may have applied. So we didn't want to cause additional confusion. So instead, we have been accepting all the mail applications. We, in fact, since March 1st, have done over 100,000 applications that we have processed. So if somebody was able to get their fingerprints, whether from a law enforcement or from a tax collector, you know, download the application, print it out, mail it to us, we have about a 24 to 48 hour processing time. So we still process them. We still got everybody who applied through the system. It just was the online portal, which is now back up because we were able to safely open our Tallahassee licensing office and they are able to do fingerprinting.
Let me wrap on this. Again, we see the numbers going up. We had 10,000 plus cases yesterday, a new record. And again, Florida is now one of the hot spots in the country. What do you think we need to do to slow this down? Or we go through the summer and things get worse. And we've got, I mean, it's not just the fact that school's coming back up soon, but we also have an election that's coming up in August and November. What do we do to change the tide, to turn the tide here?
I think it's a couple of things. One is please wear a mask. You know, if the governor is not going to mandate it, you know, take personal responsibility. You're not doing it for you because it doesn't protect you. It protects everybody around you. So if everybody is trying to, you know, care for one another, please wear a mask. Two, continue social distancing. You know, everybody has let down their guard again and people are congregating and hanging out, whether it's at a bar or restaurant. People are starting to do social activities together. Three is enforcement. local enforcement to any of these establishments that are open that are not complying with the rules and regulations, that there needs to be enforcement. Whether it's a business who's not complying, that we have to unfortunately suspend their business license, and different drastic measures like that. And then lastly, you know, everybody needs to just take personal responsibility. You know, I have my three stepsons who are here with me for the month of July, and there's an establishment here that's half bowling, half arcade, half restaurant. And the first thing they wanted to do was go to that. And unfortunately, I had to tell them no, because just because an establishment is open doesn't mean that that's, you know, really a safe place for you to be. So the more we give out information to our citizens, giving them the proper information about what is happening, that we're taking this seriously, the more we all can protect ourselves.
She is Florida's Agriculture Commissioner, Nikki Fried. Commissioner Fried, always a pleasure. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, still to come, a Florida nurse is going to share her story working in the midst of this pandemic.